Should I have had a more obscure example?
Yeah.
Okay, so I go up to the front. She says 1970. I just yell spaghetti.
Yeah, and then throw some spaghetti.
No, I don't have any spaghetti. That would make sense. There is no spaghetti.
Yeah. It took a long time to get there.
Yeah. No, me too. Hello and welcome to episode 489 of the Two Hosers Photo Show. My name is Alan in Tübingen, Germany. With me, as always, is
Adam in Vancouver.
In the five. What's going on in Vancouver, Adam?
Nothing.
Summer, long weekend coming up, though.
Yeah, long weekend. Yeah.
Or existing now that you're hearing this, but long weekend.
Yeah, sure. It's all the same, though, right?
That's what I'm saying, like a vacation from what?
Yeah, it's all the same.
Because we have that next week, too, with the kids. We have, they have school at home, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then Thursday is a holiday, and then Friday is called a bridge day, Brukatag, and because they're like, I might as well just take Friday off, too, have a four-day weekend. Like, from what? Do I still get Netflix? Do I still get Korean baseball on the TV? Okay. We're good then.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's where we're at.
Yep.
Amazon. If you need to buy your long weekend stuff, click through our site and help us out. It really does help us out. I've still bought nothing. It's been a long time since I pulled the trigger on anything. Amazon, but I got something coming up.
What's that?
A router. I'm gonna buy a router.
Okay.
I think they're not easy to buy in Germany. I don't know if you knew that. Have you tried to buy a router, like a wood router, not like a router for your computer? I have one of those.
No, I've not purchased a wood router.
Like an Oberfräse. That's what it's called.
I know what it is.
No, Oberfräse auf Deutsch.
Okay.
Yeah. So I got one that they want to sell. They're really pushing it. I don't need a professional fancy router, but I would like a decent one. And so I'll give you the short version. A buddy of mine has the cheaper version, but he also has a very, very, very expensive one as well. So he loaned me his crappy one and I tried it out and used it once. And I was like, yep, that's why he bought the expensive one. So I'm going to be getting that one. Not the one he got. He got the crazy, crazy good one.
What are you getting?
Yeah, I get the good one. The Bosch Professional, the blue model. Always get the blue model. Don't get the green.
Gotcha.
I don't even know why they make it. So there's that. But I'll get that on Amazon, and I'll click through our site. And probably, I don't think Amazon cares if I click through our site. I don't think I get any deals, but... You know, here we are.
Right.
Hey, did you notice another week just disappeared?
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. We literally just talked like 45 minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
What happened?
I don't know. All the days have melted into one since then.
Yeah. Time is legitimately a complete mess right now.
Yeah.
Somebody pointed out to me the other day that, remember those Australian wildfires? That was this year.
Right.
Yeah. That doesn't seem like this year.
No.
Seems like the mid-70s.
Yeah.
Okay. Baseball's starting back up over here.
Is it really?
Like our baseball, yeah.
Okay.
Slowly, though.
That's got to be weird.
I'm not going to know, because turns out, like, they publish, I don't know if this was the league or... League in conjunction with the government, but they published a list of guidelines that you have to follow in order just to practice. There's no season on the horizon,
right?
And so, but they figure, okay, if you want to start getting back into the swing of things, and so they have a lot of rules. So first of all, you're allowed, now stay with me on this one, I don't know how, why did they figure that out? I thought it was a 1.5 meter Abstand, 1,5 meter. So what is 1.5? Do you guys do meters on yours or what? What are you doing?
No, they're saying 6 feet.
In Canada?
Yeah.
First of all, that's just under 2 meters, which is a little bit bigger than us. But I thought Canada was metric.
Yeah, but it's conflicting. Some places they do have meters. A lot of places it's 6 feet. People have also done the conversion here. It's also like nobody measures their height here in meters, although that, I think it's in centimeters on your driver's license. But yet everyone says I'm 5'4". So you know Canada. There's a lot of conflicting when it comes to height and distances. Yet we're always in kilometers. Nobody ever speaks a mile. So yeah, it's all very confusing.
Yeah, no, understood. So we do, it's 1.5 here, so like 6 feet is almost 2 meters, not quite. It's like 1.78 or something like that, I guess.
Sure, and I think some signs actually have that.
1.78 meters?
something like cool. That. Most people just observe 6 feet as the distance.
Sure. I mean, we observe it. I mean, they observe it here, but they don't do it. They don't actually.
Well, I think it's about what you can visualize, and I think more people here, even though we're in Canada, can visualize 6 feet. That's why.
So the deal is, for sports teams starting back up, you're allowed small groups. You're up to five people in one group to practice. Okay. No more than five. You can have multiple groups on the field, but everybody has to keep the 1.5 meters. And you're only allowed, like, for every group of five people, you must have 1,000 square meters of field space. So apparently we have like 6,000 meters total of six place. So we can have, you know, like 30 people at practice, which never happens anyways, the best of times. So we're fine. But, so that's one of the rules, but also you have to organize staggered arrival and departure times so that nobody, you know, talks in the parking lot.
Right.
No, that's for real.
Yeah.
There's a whole long list of them. And then of course, at the end of practice, like first things first, you have to get there and wash your hands. And then you do your practice. And then at the end, you have to disinfect all the equipment.
Right.
Yeah, we in years past, we can't get everyone to just collect all the equipment up and put it back in the shed. Like, I don't know how we're going to get them to boil all the bats. So it's like, all right, well, this is not a thing. And then on top of that, the league, this is my favorite part. We had a good laugh over this. The league actually laid out examples of how you can greet and then say goodbye to your fellow players. It must all be verbal or visual. So, for example, you can nod. Okay, well, slow down, Professor. I can, nodding's okay? Like to go through all the little steps. Like, just how about just don't touch? Just say that.
Yeah.
But here's the big one. You're not allowed to hang for a beer after. You gotta go.
Oh yeah. Yeah, you gotta go.
All right. See you next year, guys. So I basically just said I'm not participating in this nonsense.
What about, you know, sitting in lawn chairs 10 feet apart and having a beer? You can't do that.
We do meters here.
Okay. Can you not do that?
Nope. Can't do that.
Wow.
Which is weird because over here in Germany, they're big on personal responsibility. So they tend to trust people a lot. Like, and then all of a sudden, no, none of that.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I guess they're just saying, like, you know, we don't want you to play at all. So if you really want to play really, 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 really badly, go ahead and jump through all these hoops for us.
That I'm going to not, though. I'll stick to not. I was talking to one of the guys on the team. He's like, oh, I'm not that worried about, you know, because of the infection. And I was like, yeah, I'm not worried about infection. Like, here's the deal. Again, as we said last week, I'm not a scientist. However, I'm going to go ahead and guess that if everybody just stayed outside, nobody went inside for 2 weeks, this virus would just disappear. Okay. I don't think there's a whole ton of transmission outdoors.
Probably a lot less, yeah.
Probably a lot less. Significant enough that it would, I'm not saying it's not possible. You could get hit by lightning. That is true. You could, it's a thing. However, it is. I'm going to suggest that the lion's share of the infection is happening indoors. That's my guess as a non-virologist.
Okay, yeah, that's reasonable. I think that's reasonable. Yeah.
Yes, it's not you know Home Depot reasonable, but just saying reasonable. So I'm like, great. Honestly, I don't. I'm not asking them to relax all the go hog wild. Just, you know, go ancient Rome and just go, you know, what did Nero do? Do that. Have fun, you know? That's not who I'm thinking of, but whatever. Point being, I'm going to sit this one out until, not out of fear of infection, just out of I'm not participating in the nonsense.
Yeah. And I think, you know, in here in Canada, similar, like they don't have guidelines yet for baseball. There is talk about it, and their BC Baseball, you know, says that there could potentially be some in the not too distant future, but it's going to look a lot different. And I'm guessing there's going to be a lot of these restrictions. So it's going to be tough to comply with, like the idea of, okay, between every inning, A, B, C, D, and E has to take place, which involves sanitizing everybody, you know, sanitizing every piece of equipment, like this stuff that will make it very hard for the game to be played, but also for there to be any enjoyment for kids. So it almost gets to a point where, okay, like the reason we participate in sport is because that the kids find it enjoyable or adults find it enjoyable. And there is a point where it won't be enjoyable, and therefore a lot of people will probably sit it out, like you're saying.
Yep. Now, I'm not pointing fingers. I'm not saying it should be different.
No, it's just that's the reality.
I'll wait till it's different.
Yeah, exactly. At some point, it will be different. So yeah, it might.
Well, not if you read the news. If you read the news, they say your life will never be the same again.
Yeah,
that's the news. I saw it right in the news, man. Your life will never be the same. I don't know if you know this. Coronavirus is dating your wife.
Wow.
Wait, what? That is terrible news. Yeah. Thanks a lot, CNN. I did not see that coming.
Okay, so what about the possibility, and maybe I shouldn't be giving this away on the airwaves because someone's going to steal this brilliant idea, but what about...
If it's good, I'll cut it out.
Okay, what about the t-shirt business that is going to be created by COVID-19-related t-shirt slogans?
For example?
Well, no, I'm just saying, like, I feel like that's going to be the next wave of t-shirts. Is like, there's got to already probably be a million of them out there, but whoever really, really nails the sort of nuanced comedy of this is never going to be the same might have the next smiley face t-shirt.
Like Forrest Gump, you mean?
Yeah, like Forrest Gump.
Okay, but you're right, except for my only issue with this is the naming. COVID is just a terrible name.
Okay.
Like, no, like I don't mean, like, it does not roll off the tongue.
True.
I feel like they should come up with something better. They can rename it. You can rename this now. It's not too late.
Okay.
So something that's going to sell, that's going to move units on the t-shirt. Corona is better. I mean, Corona itself, obviously you have the whole beer, you have the whole tie-in. There's got to be, I'm sure the people are making those t-shirts, but COVID is just, I don't know. It's like the weird kid who was transferred into your grade six class from Czechoslovakia. It's like,
right.
His name's COVID? Oh, no, we can't. We're calling you Kevin, okay? That's how it's going to go. That's it. Why do you put sour cream on everything, Kevin?
Yeah.
And that's what he does.
What about the Corona beer? I heard way back, I don't know if it's still the case, but I heard in the early going of all this that Corona beer sales were down like a ridiculous percent.
Yeah, again, I haven't fact checked
any of this, but yeah, that's a bit of a unfortunate naming issue.
They have to lean into this though. They have to lean in and somehow and come back and bounce back and I don't know how they do it, but yeah.
Okay.
You're getting into a weird area because I kind of want to have fun with this, but it's not that fun.
No, it's not that fun, but it's still okay to smile. I think that's what we're saying.
It is okay to smile. However, on the fake news bit, I just want to clear something up too, because I've heard what I was talking this week with one of our listeners, Scott. What's up, Scott? And you know, he was asking about like the infection rate in Germany, because in Germany they're doing a huge, like, trying to track the, basically it's called the R naught, the reinfection reproduction rate, and then the naught being the number of people that each infected person infects. And so early on, I think generally it's, despite what you read, but the guy in Uganda, wherever that was, Ghana, who infected 500 people, which is not true. I think generally it's an R3 is how it was going, which is very high. So every infected person infects three people, and you can see how that would explode exponentially very quickly, right?
Sure.
And so Germany had very strict a strict goal to limit that. If they could get that down to a 0.65, this will grind to a halt. That's the idea. However, keeping it, it's not like it's instantaneous. It does take time. And keeping it at 0.65 is not easy to do, especially in this case. However, so they've been kind of tracking that number, and it was going quite well. I think with all the quarantining and the stay at home and all the measures they took, originally took, after a few weeks or a month or whatever, that number did get down to like a 0.7 something, 0.73. I forget the exact number, but it was quite low, which was very good news. And now, what they're, two separate sides to the story. I'll try to be quick because this is super interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So what, as we're gradually reopening, and they're going very slow in Germany, very methodical, which should surprise nobody, that they're methodical about it, but that's how this is going. And they're keeping a very close watch on that R number. Well, we've got a couple of flare-ups have happened. In certain spots. And so one of the things that Germany has done is said, okay, we're going to leave it up to each region. We can't just create a blanket policy for all of Germany, because Frankfurt is not Munich, and Munich is not Stuttgart, and Stuttgart's not Tübingen, etc. Like, they're all very different regions. So we'll leave it up to the regional people, but we're going to apply numbers to this. There's going to be a metric, meaning for every 100,000 people you have, if you have over 50 new infections, boom, we put the e-brake on, and we shut down again. That's how it goes.
Okay.
So what's being reported in North America, because I've had people ask that. That's how Scott got in touch. He said, "Oh, like, I heard about this," and they said, "Oh yeah, they're saying, oh, Germany's putting the brakes on reopening." Well, that's not actually true. What they're saying is that we have these metrics in place if regions need to lock down.
Right.
That is there. That contingency has been laid out for us, and so that's what's happening. Now they're reporting that the R naught number has crept above one, which apparently it has in a couple of regions, a couple of hotspots, but over a very short amount of time. And so Germany has committed to publish the long-term numbers, the long-term trends versus the daily spikes, just for a comparison, just to have a large enough sample size to understand that this isn't, oh my God, the sky is falling. So they're trying to manage the risk and manage everything in as best they can. Yet I see it being reported on CNN as, oh my God, Germany's on fire.
Right.
Very irresponsible. This is why I stopped reading the news for that good portion of a while ago, because they're just somehow invested in freaking everybody out. Mm-hmm. That's what goes. So just, so you know, that's what's happening here. It's very, very well thought out. Even though I know everybody doesn't have all the information on COVID and what's happening. There's a lot to be learned still. But Germany's doing a very good job of adding, basically using logic and specific metrics to manage this horrible situation. Not the Home Depot, of course. Like, they're going hog wild with the carts, obviously, but the rest of Germany, I'm very confident. And also, what you don't hear a lot of is Angela Merkel, the who is she? Chancellor? It's not chancellor, it's chancelleress, I think. Chancellorin. She's doing an excellent job. She used to be a scientist. Like she got her degree in science, and just me saying that sounds like an idiot. I think she got her degree in science. But she's a scientist. Like that's what she did in a previous life, and she's also not up for re-election. She announced long before this that she would not be seeking re-election, and so there's nothing in it for her other than to just do the best job she possibly can based on logic. So very confident here that we're under, you know. What I'm also, I guess the point I'm saying is, don't believe everything you read in North America.
Okay.
Woodwork update real quick. Made a few new things. I am loving the French cleat.
I don't know what that is.
Two of our listeners who do woodwork will understand what I'm talking about. It is the greatest thing. I'm basically incorporating the French cleat. I'm building a giant mirror, a big framed mirror for the hallway. In the main hallway there. Not quite done. Got to paint it a couple more coats of paint and we'll hang it up. But I built in a hidden French cleat in the back to mount it on the wall. And I'm going to build everything I have to mount, from picture frames to anything, cabinets, anything, all going to feature a hidden French cleat now. Love it. I'll explain some other time.
Okay.
That's the update. Been building a lot, doing quite a lot of that, enjoying that. Before we get into the shoot anything interesting, I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Mount Everest. What's up with that?
Why do you ask?
No, I'm just kidding. That's a very non-specific question. I had no segue into Mount Everest other than my kids, somehow, 6 and 8 years old, somehow obsessed with Mount Everest.
Mm.
Like they're asking me.
From a cartoon?
I don't know. I asked them, like were you... Was it part of your school or like lessons or no, just the highest mountain in the world. And they want to know about Mount Everest. And so, my wife had Googled a picture, like wanted to show them. And I happened to have a strange obsession with Mount Everest. And I know more, way too much about Mount Everest for somebody who has zero interest in ever climbing Mount Everest.
Okay.
Like, I mean, basic stuff like, you know, like what is the last little stretch at the top? Like, if you have to climb up this last little bit to get to the top, what's it called? Do you know?
If you said it, I would, because I've watched some documentaries and stuff.
There's no shame in not knowing. I'm the nerd for knowing and not being a climber.
No, but again, I've watched climbing documentaries, so I know quite a bit about it too, but just from watching documentaries. But it's not an obsession, so it probably
was... From the Nepalese side, from the South approaches, it's called the Hillary Step.
Okay, and that rings a bell for sure. Right. If you put that on a multiple choice question, I would have picked it out.
Gotcha. And so the kids were asking about it, and so my wife Googled it, and then she saw a horrifying picture of just like 151 people just jammed into the Hillary Step.
Which, okay,
if you understand, like it's at 29,000 feet, like it is really high. Okay, that's the sign. That Angela Merkel told me that, she's a scientist. It's really high, and. And I said, I explained to the kids, I was like, all right, well, I'll tell you what you want to know about Everest. And explain to them, like, here's how it goes. There's different camps, because they want to know how you climb it. I said, well, here you go to different camps, and here's camp 4. That's like where you basically get ready to assault the peak. And but camp 4, you're already in the death zone. Like, you're already dying. Technically, you're already dying, so you only have X number of hours to get down from there.
Right.
And so you imagine that. Imagine, and I show them how you walk on Everest. Like, you don't just not like you're doing like the first quarter of the Grouse Grind. It's there's no oxygen up there. And so even though you're on a breathing and you know you have a tank and all that stuff, you're exhausted. So you do one step and you wait for a couple minutes and you know whatever it is and keep moving. And so explain that to them, and they were horrified. And then to imagine that there's like 115 people lined up at the Hillary Step, and you can't walk around anybody. So they said there's a 2-hour wait to get up the Hillary step, and then a 2-hour wait to get down. That's how crowded it gets. Okay. Now on Everest, because everyone can technically do it. But I explained all that to them, and they had more questions, and I said, okay, well, you're going down a weird area because you're 8, but I'm going to tell you because here you go. When you die up there, you're there. Like, that's it. Like, so people walk past you forever. Could you imagine that? And that was, and my son, his whole thing was like, yeah, well, they put themselves in that position. What are you going to do? You know, like, they're idiots. What are you going to do? Step over them. Come on.
Right.
But my kids wanted to watch a documentary. Like, they wanted more information. So we watched a documentary on YouTube. And, like, there's no documentaries about, wow, Everest. It's not like the movie Rudy, but set at Everest with a happy ending.
Right.
It's always, you know, somebody died. And so my son, again, he was just like, he slept like a baby last night, no problem. Yeah, like, what sort of idiot does that? My daughter was in tears for like 4 hours. Just couldn't believe, Dad, you're not allowed to climb Mount Everest. Okay, if you say so. Was never going to.
Right.
Was not going to cross my mind. However, the one good thing that I've noticed is that I watched, you ever see the IMAX documentary about Everest, like in 1996?
Yeah, I saw it. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. I remember seeing it at like Science World or something.
Yeah, same here. Saw it there, yeah. And the point being though, I mean, like, IMAX film is huge, cameras are huge. They did not get, like, they didn't hike up, they didn't get to the top of the mountain with the IMAX cameras. And so once you get to the top, once you get like up to camp 3 or 4, all of a sudden they're like shooting with a little Sony Handycam, and then at the top it's only stills, you know. So there's no way you could shoot, you know, that big camera up there. It's not possible. But now with the technology, now all of a sudden you get amazing HD video at the summit. So that part is pretty cool. The rest of it, you know. Never, not a good ending very, very, very often.
Okay.
Just hopefully my daughter sleeps tonight. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
All right. Reminder, monthly challenge for this month for May is art. Hashtag that, Two Hosers Monthly Challenge. Hashtag Hey Hosers. Even better, do both of those and tag us at Two Hosers on the Instagram, and we will check that out. Talk about it at the end of the month. Adam, did you shoot anything interesting this week?
No, I didn't. I did not. I took just the photos out on Sunday.
Okay, at least you did the challenge, though, right?
Yeah, I did the challenge, but no extra photos.
So after we recorded last Friday, we went out. My kids wanted to go out and play in the forest, and there's a little creek and all that stuff. And so we met some friends of ours. Brought their kids out that they play with, and so we went and played in the creek. And I actually thought I was going to shoot my Sunday picture on Saturday, just in case. I was like, oh, what's going to happen? So I ended up shooting on Sunday. We're good. But shot a bunch of, it was just really nice light, and shot a bunch of pictures. Most of my favorite ones were photos of our friends and their kids. And so I didn't really ask them if I could post them. I should have asked. Because they probably wouldn't care, but a couple of really nice photos of the dad and the daughter and whatever. They love him. They're thrilled. Like he's ready to. He can't wait to get him printed out. But I figured I would just include a couple of my son. One pretty basic, just kind of hanging out in the long grass and the forest, but just kind of nice light. And then when he was in the bushes. In down by the creek, in sort of like in the trees, there was this really, really cool light kind of coming through the leaves of the trees, and we create these sort of like these pools of light. It's like, hey, man, stand here, do this, do that, and I shot this kind of, I don't know why he's brooding. Like, I don't know what this kid thinks he is. Like, he's saving up to be James Dean or something.
Mm-hmm.
But here he is brooding in the woods, covered in mud, and I just love the light and thought, oh, it's going to look cool in black and white.
Yeah, well, it's good.
All shot with the 24-105, which I'm embarrassed to say is getting a lot of stick time on my camera right now.
Okay.
Strictly for the ability, I mean, the zoom aside, it can flip over from video to stills instantaneously. So it's really, really handy. And I'm kind of not hating the pictures.
Sure.
So there you go. Photo challenge this week. It was Sunday. And then you know what? You know why? I think I told you last week why I chose Sunday as the topic. I wanted to get it out of the way. I didn't want to be on Friday afternoon, like every week, scrambling, like, oh, I need a challenge photo.
Okay.
So I did Sunday. I completely forgot that Sunday was Mother's Day.
Oh, I thought that's why you did it.
No. Mother's Day, not a humongous thing here in Germany.
Okay, they don't care about moms.
Okay, well, buckle up, Schwartz, here it comes. It exists. It sort of exists. It definitely is a thing. Like, it gets mentioned, but it's not. They don't go nuts because sometime, like, 80-plus years ago, the day was co-opted by this dude named Hitler.
Okay.
Who wanted to sort of use Mother's Day as a way to convince mothers to have more Aryan babies because, you know, that was his move.
Gotcha. Okay.
So people can imagine.
Don't like to. Yeah, I get it.
It's creeping in. Like, it's sort of kind of we're forgetting because it existed before that. Like, I think the mythology, and I think I even basically talked about it that way before, is that, oh, it was invented by Hitler. And that's kind of which is not true. It dates back to like 1919 or something like that. But, so before him. But, people like to say that, oh, it's invented and thus, but it is creeping back in. We're starting to forget about what he did and honoring the mother. So that's why I completely forgot it was Mother's Day, but it kind of worked out for you because we got a Mother's Day photo.
Mm-hmm.
So here is your wife and some goofy kid.
Mm-hmm.
No, he's not goofy at all. And here's what I found interesting. You kind of have that similar lighting that I have on my son.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just found light, just bounced off houses into this spot, and I saw it on the tree, and I thought, perfect, I'm going to stand over there, right into where the nice light was falling, and it kind of, you know, brings them away from the background. The light on them is almost like a spotlight effect, kind of like you would get if I shoehorned in some flash here, but I assure you all this light is ambient light.
I was debating, like I had to go back and look at the photo of my son to see, because my photo of my son, there's no flash, like, right. and there's no buildings where we are too. Like that is just light coming through the trees. But I looked at yours and I thought, okay, I obviously he's found some light here. He hasn't created this because Adam's lazy, and so he found this stumbled into this light, knocked on his door and said, hey, you got a minute? And you're like. Really kind of busy doing karaoke. Yeah. And so he wandered outside and this is what happened. But I thought, okay, no, he's got this found light, but it looks to me just by the catch lights that he's got, like, on camera, like just a hint, like two stops underexposed flash. That's what it looked like to me.
Yeah.
And I was going to ask you about that, but now you're telling me that did not exist.
No, all found light. So it's bouncing off of the white houses behind me into this spot. And so you get because it's coming through the trees from behind. So it gives the light on my wife's hair, sort of the backlighting and rim light around on her shoulder. But then because it's bouncing back from the other direction, it's also the key light. So you get the orangey glow from the sun, because this is like 7-something in the evening, 7:30, let's say, something like that. And then you get all the blue light in the background that's not being lit up by the sun.
Which is one of the reasons, one of many reasons, that like this, like right now is one of my favorite times of year for photographs in the Northern Hemisphere, for this exact reason. Because the shadows, again, don't take my word as gospel because I'm colorblind, but to me, the shadows tend to look a little more blue this time of year than they do, let's say, at the end of June
Okay.
And so what you get, like, but not crazy blue where it's like, all right, this is mid-February where it's lousy. It's just that little hint of blue. So like the non-spotlight effect, the non-spotlight light, the non-rim light, everything else that's just kind of like on her hands, for example, it tends to me to look slightly cooler than the rest of the existing light.
Yeah.
I love this mix. It's just enough to notice, but you don't actually notice. Like, it's not the first thing that you notice. If you look really hard, you can kind of tell, and you don't know why you like it, but it's that contrast. Again, we've talked about the blue and the orange. It exists for a reason. I didn't invent it. I just love it. Did you watch The Untouchables and look notice it all? You didn't.
No, I didn't.
I thought that's what you're copying. That's why I looked at this picture and I was like, Elliot Ness.
No, it was just good light. Just really easy to identify good light because you can see in behind the tree. If I removed my wife and son from the photo, you would have just see this kind of like gradient effect because there's a big sort of swath of nice light that would illuminate the middle of that tree. And you can see at the top of the tree, it gets a lot darker. And then I just thought, oh, that's perfect. Wherever that light's coming from, I don't care. But I know because the sun's in behind that tree, I know I'm going to be able to get nice sort of rim and hair light. And then wherever that light is bouncing from is going to be easy to use as a key light. So it's just look around. That's the moral of the story. Look around. And once I took the photo and got exposure right, I didn't even care if the smiles were any of that good. I just thought, great light, good example for the podcast.
Exactly. Now, which lens did you use for this?
I can't. I think it's the 50mm. I can't remember.
I'm going to have to look then. You're making sure. Me look.
Might be 85, I think 50. I don't know.
50.
Okay.
It's a 50, and you shot it at an F. See, I hate to say this. I'm going to call it a 2.8-2.84 split because I can't say 3.2. It's weird to me.
Sure. Yeah.
So you saw it between 2.8 and 4, which gave you with a 50mm gives you enough depth of field to hold focus on both eyes.
Yeah, and that's because I would have probably gone a shallower depth of field, but because she was standing in behind him, I thought I better give it a little bit of extra, I think. And I could have gone to F4 too, but it was just really where the exposure was falling. I didn't play with the settings too much because this was done, and again, probably 30 seconds. So
right.
They didn't give me a lot of time. I sort of said, oh, this is Sunday and it's 7:30. The light will be good. Let's quickly go take a Mother's Day shot.
It's funny how they don't give you a lot of time. We talked about that before too, but like I was told you I was shooting pictures of our friends and their kids there. And it's the first time I'd really ever photographed them. They're kind of newer friends. They haven't found out I'm a jerk yet. So we're trying to keep that under wraps until it's too late. But it's the first time I kind of really shot around with them. Like, they were thrilled because they have seen some of my photos in the past. They know I'm not just, you know, they know I'm not full of crap. And so, you know, I was shooting and they're like, yeah, like, no problem. Like, please go nuts. And I explained, I was like, yeah, it's funny because my family does not feel that way. They're like, all right, enough already. Hey, Rembrandt, put the paintbrush down, okay? And yeah, I just compared myself to Rembrandt.
Sure.
You get a problem with that?
No.
So anyways, he laughed. He's like, yeah, well, you know, that's just how it goes. And there's probably more conversation to that, but we'll skip it. All right, let's have a look at mine. As I said, I wasn't going to shoot a Sunday. I thought I had it wrapped up on Saturday. That's how good I am. One day better than you. But then we saw this. I saw this amazing light coming in just as I was taking my daughter to bed, and thought, you know what? I'm going to capture this. Kablam!
So you forced her to sit by the window and look out the window longingly.
Maybe she's just upset she can't play with her friends, Adam.
Yeah, maybe.
Although I just told you she had the day before, but not all, yeah, not like how she used to. So is that how it looks like? She's forced to sit there?
Yeah. She's like, Dad, why won't you just let me go to bed?
That's interesting because that wasn't the case. That wasn't her attitude at all. She's actually hitting a stride now for all the things I've just said. She's just sort of emerging into she wants her picture taken. Now, or not that she wants it, but she actually appreciates it.
Okay.
Like, not enough for me to change the story I just told, but it's definitely going in a different direction.
Gotcha.
So she was all good with this because she was sitting up there. She was like, this is her sitting on her chest of drawers, looking out the window. And I was like, you know what? I'll be right back. So it was dark though. Like what you're seeing, like that sky, it was dark. But in order to get an exposure on her face, I had to kind of really like shoot this. I think I shot this at, you can see the grain. This is like at like an ISO 6400 on the X100. F2 wide open. I hope I don't have the, I have to go and check now and see if I have the ND filter on. I hope not. Cause this was like 2 seconds. So I'm worried I put it on last time and didn't take it off. Oh no. Are you there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Will you vamp for a sec while I reach over and get my camera?
Why'd you say, oh no.
Because I have left the ND filter on somehow.
So you could have had a lower ISO.
Well, I don't know. Or better shutter speed, because this was taken at like half a second or something.
Oh, so she had to be really still.
Yeah. No, it's okay. I'm scrolling down right now. No, ND filter was off. So it was really, definitely. Definitely just a very dark situation. Okay, I'm back. Discombobulated. Righted the ship. So this was like a shutter speed of like, I'm going to say a full second in order to get this image, which on the X100 is not terribly difficult to do. Okay.
Yay. That's a good photo. I like it. It looks good. And if you don't, you know, pixel peep too much, then the digital grain is very acceptable.
Right. I add a little bit of correction in what do we use? Lightroom.
Mm-hmm.
I add a little bit. I don't go too crazy with it because you just get kind of soft, plasticky features on the face. So there's that. What I like best about this is the colors and what you can do with almost no light. Like, it's such an amazing camera, as we've talked about a bazillion times. So definitely get one.
Okay.
Topic this week. You sent me a slideshow of your daughter's birthday.
Yeah.
Which I watched the half of.
Perfect.
Not your fault. I just was busy. To be fair, I was busy doing the woodworking, the French cleaning that we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
So not that. Very, very well done, though.
Sure.
So I thought, let's talk a little bit about slideshows. That's the topic this week. Now, they used to have a bad rap. Like, way back in the day, pre-computer, slideshows, they were a bad word. And I'm not sure why. Any idea why?
No.
Have you ever seen somebody show their vacation on a slide projector?
Oh yeah, on an actual slide projector. I've never seen it, just in cheesy comedies on television.
Okay. I don't know why they got ripped on so much. They used to require an awful lot of effort.
I'm sure.
Like, well, first off, think about it. You had to commit. Before you went on vacation, you had to commit to shooting on actual slide film. Like, it wasn't like you were shooting negatives and then getting them processed as slides. You were shooting slides.
Oh, I just assumed that you could have just converted them.
I believe you could, in theory. That would be expensive. Generally, people are shooting slides.
Okay.
Which is reversal film, which is excellent. Like, the film is fantastic. You know, it's like oftentimes it'd be like ISO 50 or something like that. I still have slide film here that I have not shot. It's a lot of fun. You get great images. Like on the Kodachrome or whatever, like really, really great colors, very fine grain. Cause like, as you can imagine, ISO 50 and even lower. Awesome. But you then got them back as positives. They weren't negatives that you printed. So you could get prints from them, but it's a specialty thing and thus expensive. And so you got them back as slides. So there, out of the gate, you've committed to that. Then... Okay. then you had to have the hardware to show them. You had to have a screen. You had to have a slide projector. How many people had a slide projector?
I don't know anybody.
Yeah, exactly. And a dark room. Yeah. So you couldn't just show people your pictures. It had to be a big thing. And then when you couldn't just show them, you had to stand up there and click to the next slide, and you had to have a narrative. Even if it was a bad one, even if it was your boring trip to Hawaii, you still had to craft a narrative that would then go along with your slideshow.
Sure.
I think it's a lost art, really. I'm not joking. I've looking back at the time, I remember seeing a couple of friends of the family show their vacation on a slide projector, and thinking at the time, like, what are we doing here? But I think that was just because it was probably on I Love Lucy, or no, what's that? I Dream of Jeannie, and it was probably some sort of a cliche that slideshows are the worst.
Right.
They're not. And it got me to thinking. Best slideshow I ever saw.
Okay.
I can tell you exactly which one it was. It was like 2 hours long, and it was awesome. It was a guy named Joran Krop. Does that name ring a bell?
No.
Ties in, oddly, to our earlier conversation about Mount Everest. So this guy, Joran Krop, Swedish dude, decides he wants to climb Mount Everest. So he got on his bike and rode his bike there from Sweden. That's really far, Adam.
Seems like a long trip.
Yeah, and he decided, you know what? I'm not going to be one of these guys who hires 19 Sherpas to carry my, water purifier up. So I'm going to bring all my own equipment with me on a bike trailer, ride there, and climb it by myself.
Okay.
And he did. Wow. And he shot photos along the way, and he turned it into a slideshow presentation that he traveled around, I guess, the world. I had no idea who this guy was. I'd never heard of him. My girlfriend at the time basically dragged me to it. She's like, yeah, we're going to go see this slideshow of this guy, this presentation. And I was like, that doesn't sound like a thing at all. Like, I'm considering maybe we should just break up instead. And she dragged me there. Oh my God, am I glad she did. Like, what an amazing presentation. And he stood up there for 2 hours, and he told all the stories about riding his bike and all the things he encountered, and how, like, he rode his bike through Iran, and that was weird because he would basically ride in a straight line for 14 hours a day, and then just stop and sleep and get up and ride in a straight line for 14 more hours because it's just a desert. And it's just crazy, the story he told. And he was there when he climbed. It was actually that horrible year when if you're familiar with the story of Into Thin Air, with the big disaster on Everest. He was there that year. That was the same year that he climbed. And he wrote a book about it, and I bought the book, and it's phenomenal. I wish I still had it. I lent it to somebody who then lent it to somebody else, which I was kind of sour about because I don't think it's in production anymore. I don't think it's in print because he, after this amazing story of climbing Everest by himself on his bike, he then slipped and fell in, I think, outside Seattle a few years later and just died.
Oh, no.
Like, slipped and fell on some kind of, like, little bouldering rock that everyone, all their weekend warriors go. He's out having fun with his buddies or something like that, and just freak accident. And unfortunately died, and I think his book is no longer in print. If you can find it, read it. It's an amazing, amazing story. Unfortunately, you're not going to see him in person anymore. I would highly recommend that if that was a thing. Like, that was one of the things I'm really lucky to have seen him. Great slideshow, great storyteller. There you go. So that's the key to a good slideshow. Now, you don't have to do anything extraordinary, like ride your bike to Mount Everest and climb it necessarily, but it's kind of important to have a decent story.
Okay.
So, a little more background on slideshows, because I've done a lot of these. Now, I messed around with doing the video version of slideshows very early on, before anybody even had a scanner. And so what I used to do, if you can believe it, I would get all the photos I wanted to use. This is way, way, way back. And I would actually shoot those photos with a video camera. Zooms and all. Like if I wanted to push in on a photo, I would physically zoom in, and that's how I would cut. I wouldn't do that on the computer later. It would all be done in camera. And then I would cut out in between each photo, right?
Okay.
Later on, once scanners became a thing, I would scan them and then manipulate them in. I would use Final Cut Pro. That was my choice of editing programs at the time. And it turns out I invented this fun fact. I invented the Ken Burns effect.
Wow.
In the same way I invented the Brennizer method.
Right.
A few years after it was already invented.
Right.
But I didn't know. I did not know how, you know, Ken Burns did all that. I was doing it, and then it showed up in iMovie a couple years later, and they actually named it the Ken Burns effect, as they should. He really popularized it, not me. But I started doing these photo slideshows for families, and then eventually it became for people's weddings, which I think you've been to a couple of them, and mm-hmm. they are a huge hit at the wedding.
Sure.
I had the formula down, and like that was like, you know, like how would I tell this story? And basically like I would tell like a story of the, I would break it into three sections and tell the bride and groom, here's how it's going to go. I need 100 photos from you guys. We're going to have three sections. We're going to have you growing up, say the groom growing up, the bride growing up, and then the two of you together. And here's how the photos are going to go. I want 40, 40, 20. That's how it's going to go. Now, if you come to me with 38, 38, and 44, or 34, that's fine too. But don't stray too much from that formula. That's what I would tell them.
Mm-hmm.
Because I knew what that would do time-wise, how that story is going to be told, and boom. And this, they would always play, depending on the songs we chose, they'd play between 12 and 15 minutes. Ideally, it'd be 13 minutes was about the wheelhouse of where you wanted this to go at a wedding.
Okay.
I always wanted people at the end to say, oh, that was great, I want to see it again, versus, that was pretty good, 2 minutes too long.
Right.
You never want to hear that. So I had this down. In fact, so I had it down so well that I started to see people, other wedding guys started to copy me, which it's weird to say, because it's like, well, it's slideshows are slideshows. I didn't invent the slideshow, but I could see the exact format being used, the same title cards. Like I was very, very particular. I still am to this day. I like white titles over black background. I don't like to go crazy. I don't like to put titles over pictures. But I would start seeing that exact title format and everything, the complete layout. But I actually didn't care. I was like, yeah, flattery. Like I said, I didn't invent this, so go nuts. If this is a good storytelling method, go with it. And the last bit I was going to talk about, how I would show these at these big venues. Because you think about it, you got this big projector, you have to run the sound. Like, how do you do that? So you want to be able to hook up your DVD player, or whatever, however you're playing it, you want to hook it up to the projector. Well, the DJ with the speakers is probably like way on the other side of the venue. So what do? You're not going to bring, you know, 100 feet of cable for the audio, are you?
Probably not.
Be nice, but now you got to mess around with that. And usually I'm in these weddings, like for example, there was one for your brother-in-law. When your brother-in-law got married, you were there, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So this was what I used to do. Is I used to do the opposite of like when you make a movie and you have, you know, a camera and then you have sound separately, you do the slate and marry the two together later. What I would do was basically split them later. I would create the audio on a CD, the video on a DVD, play them across the room and make sure they timed up exactly, which was a problem. So I would always have a countdown, and I would tell the DJ, here's the thing. Hit play and pause, and when I'm going to put a countdown on the screen, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, when it gets to 1, I want you to hit play and walk away. That's your job. You got her, Big Otter. That's what I would always hear from the DJ. Your brother-in-law's wedding, we do that. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Boom. Walk away. Well, it's not like the music happens right away. I obviously have a few seconds of black. Well, he just fast forwards. Oh, all of a sudden, nothing lines up. So I stop. I go over and stop, explain to him, like, listen, really, when that one disappears, just hit play, go get a coffee. Just do that. We hit play again. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. He does it. Doesn't hear anything. Fast forwards. So I went over there. I was like, okay, what are you doing, man? He's like, yeah, but there's no music. I don't care. That's not part of your job description. So I sent him away. I said, hey, why don't you go get a coffee now? And he did. He left. Just walked out. So I had someone else hit. I think I hit play and then ran over. And as soon as it got to zero, I hit play on the DJ stuff. And it played fine after that.
I don't remember any of that.
I wish you had. I was debating. I was like, do I tell the story? Because he's not going to remember.
No, I don't remember that. I think the DJ did a great job.
Well, he went and had a coffee while I took care of his job. I did both. I was like, I don't want you to think, sir. I figured this out so that you didn't have to think. I did all the thinking yesterday. You're done. Hit play, walk away. That's all you got to do. Okay, so that's how you don't do it.
Okay.
Now, keys to a good slideshow, Adam. I what I did see of yours, I will watch the rest later. But I saw the first part with all the photos. Very well done. Excellent. Like, really great. What is the key? What are some of the keys to making a good slideshow, especially now that we can do it digitally?
I would keep the transitions the same.
Okay.
Because a lot of people
ahead a little bit. Yes.
Well, I was gonna say, how about choose good photos?
Yeah. Well, that's good. That's actually good. Choose good high resolution photos.
Sure. And have there be, like you said, you're trying to tell a story. So have there be a sequence, whether it's following, in this case, like this slideshow, the story was, okay, my daughter, has a birthday. I'm going to follow her from, you know, around one. I sort of started when photos looked like her. So she was probably 6 months old when I started the photos, and then up to current. So I, for her sake, I had more little kid baby photos because I knew she would like that more, and less current photos. But that's also a reflection on, I took a lot more photos when my kids were young, and then as they got older and became less interested, there's less photos. So, but it's sort of, the idea is like, okay, let's follow her. The story is, let's follow her from when she was little till now. So I went in order of that progression. I didn't jump around and pick a photo of her when she was 2, then 11, then 4, then 8. That would seem confusing. Right. So this had a very natural sequence. You could see her getting older in the photos.
And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, if you basically just go into one of your simple, whatever they're called, like the photo program or whatever they're called now. It used to be iPhoto, now it's just photos. If you just hit, make a slideshow that we can play at a party, go. It'll just pick random photos and throw them on the screen. That's not terrible, but you can see the difference between that and something that someone like yourself has taken care to produce.
Right.
And so it is. So first off, it is one, pick good photos. That's great. Two, find a narrative, define that narrative. And now in this case, in most cases, you have a very convenient narrative of this person is born and getting older. Hey, great. Let's follow that. Like that. That's why one of the reasons that these are such a big hit at weddings is you've taken the two most important people at the wedding, the bride and the groom, and you have just basically laid their life out in front of people. And so you already have a head start, but use that head start. So in your case, you've taken, okay, here's my daughter's life. Like, I'm trying to get the first 13 years of her life. Let's follow that narrative. But also within that narrative, little things happen. And so, like, for example, your daughter starts playing sports or being a dancer or whatever it is. Let's incorporate that. Let's tell her story within that timeline.
Right.
You didn't just pick 40 photos of her eating ice. She likes ice cream. So here's 40 ice cream photos, each one slightly older, 4 months older each time. Ice cream.
Right.
And they're different because she used to like chocolate. Now she likes vanilla. So Like, I wouldn't, I would not watch that.
And I think that, I think most people who are doing this kind of slideshow would pick key events, like you said, maybe activities, dance, maybe key events for children like Halloween, Easter, birthdays, maybe a family vacation, and just select, you know, photos from things that they like, things that, that we did as a family, so that, yeah, you get sort of this, this whole, hey, I did a lot of stuff growing up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. So once you have that, and then the next thing to think about, next thing I think about is the length. Like, how long do you want this to be? Here's the little tip for you. Shorter the better.
Mm-hmm.
Which sounds easy, because it's like, oh yeah, that just, it takes less time. No, it actually takes more time to make it shorter, unfortunately. It's easy to throw, well, here's all the photos from their childhood, but to go and select them all and get it down is tough. But something like this, now, you incorporated a bunch of birthday well wishings as well.
Yeah, so there's like video.
That made the length, but like just the slideshow part of it, you're probably, like, you want to keep it under 10 minutes. I think you did even better than that. I think you're probably around 7.
Something
maybe?
Like that, yeah. Yeah, like, yeah.
Not quite two songs. Right, like, that's what you want to shoot for. And so, you know, and so like for the wedding one, for example, I said like 13 minutes is about right. Trust me, getting some of, like, people when they get married, you know, what are they, 30, you know, 25, 30, however old they are now, these are the general age. That's not a lot of photos. That's one photo per year, maybe a little bit more, 1.5 photos per year of your life. And that's how we're going to tell your story. That's really hard to do, but accept that challenge and work within it. And trust me, it's way better if you can keep it tight. Next, and this ties in with the length, song selection. Key. Now, you gave us the example last week of some great songs that you like. Now, it's nice that you pick sort of poignant songs. Is nice, but you know what I notice is that there's two things. I said when people make these that are not very well done, they either pick a song that they like, or B, a song that the person will like the subject of the video.
Okay.
This is a mistake. Pick a song that everybody likes.
Sure.
Because your daughter, I know your daughter's a humongous fan of Who Let the Dogs Out. But first of all, no one else is. And B, even if they are, it's not going to last. It's not going to stand the test of time. Pick something timeless. And there is one group that I used to use a lot of, and it's actually mentioned online. So one of our listeners mentioned it. It's true. The Beatles are a great selection.
Sure.
Now, they've probably been in 19 of your videos already, so you do want to mix it up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But they're timeless for a reason. Now, there's stuff now that's going to be timeless that I think you've done a good job of. It's much more difficult to pick those out because you don't have the luxury of looking back, but pick a song that's going to last. That's what I'm saying. Next, consider the pacing of the photos. I think that what you did with yours is a very excellent pacing, how long they're on the screen for. You don't want them to be on for too long, and they can't be on for just a blink of an eye.
Right.
So think about what that is. I generally establish them to be around 5 seconds as my baseline.
Yeah, I think the ones in my slideshow are 4 seconds.
Yeah, and I go down to 4, I go up to 6, depending on the mood of like that particular section. Like when I do the groom growing up, they're probably going to be about 4.5 seconds, maybe 4 seconds, depending on the number of pictures and the length of the song they would like. And then when it gets to the couple, they tend to be, you know, 6 seconds long, because now it's a slightly different thing. It's probably a more romantic song. We don't mind seeing them. And I generally have, I then add to that, part of the length of the photos helps you establish your zoom/pan tilt rate. Mm-hmm. Meaning, you know, this is the Ken Burns effect where you're zooming in or zooming out, moving across an image up and down, whatever it is. That the length of the photo on screen will help dictate how fast you do it. You can't pan too very fast on a 4 second photo. Not possible. True. Looks terrible. True.
Yeah, it looks bad if you do.
The other thing is I like to alternate. Like I zoom into one, zoom out of the next, zoom in, zoom out, zoom. I don't like to zoom in, zoom in, zoom in, zoom in. Doesn't look right.
Yeah.
So you kind of alternate that and pan across a few of them. Transitions. That's the last thing I'll talk about because you nailed it.
Just dissolves.
How many? Yeah, I was gonna say, how many transitions are there on a computer now?
I don't know. Too many. I don't even know
7,000?
I don't know what most of them are. I really only ever use the dissolve.
I use the star wipe. Star wipe. Star wipe.
Yeah.
I don't even touch the star wipe. It's dissolve. It is 100% dissolve. That's it. And see, the funny thing is in actual videos, I don't dissolve. I hate it. I like being able to cut, hard cut, hard cut, hard cut.
Yeah.
The joke in editing is if you can't solve it, dissolve it. Not a funny joke, but that's what they say. But with these photos, dissolve works fantastic. That is it. I will use 98% dissolves, and occasionally I will use a wipe or a push in or something like that. If there is a certain photo that deserves it, that maybe it's on a music cue, and I can think of one very specific. I remember doing one for someone and they wanted ABBA's Dancing Queen. And so it went from a slow song into Dancing Queen, and that initially, you know, that beginning of how that song goes?
Mm-hmm.
There's that, and that worked out great with a photo, like, hit exactly on that music cue, a push in from the side, and then it went back to dissolves the rest of the song. So 99.9% dissolves, the occasional wipe or push in. There you go. And I think that's it. I think that's all you need to know. I mean, you can, in terms of actually physically doing this, there are so many programs now that can handle this. That's not really important. Like even the most basic programs offer you some modicum of control, which is kind of awesome. It's not just a matter of plug them in, walk away. You can control the length and dissolves and stuff like that. So I have no idea. What did you use? What was your program?
I just used iMovie.
Which does a great job, like, obviously. So, there you go. Anything to add to keys to a good slideshow?
No, I don't. I think it's, for the most part, covered. But go and try it.
Yeah, make them. I mean, no better time. I mean, now you can, the fact that you can even share them on YouTube, you don't have to burn DVDs or anything like that. Like, that's fantastic. You don't have to get in a fight with a DJ over how to play these. Easy. Easy peasy. Monthly challenge is art for the month of May. Hashtag that two hosers monthly challenge. Hashtag hey hosers. Even better, do those and tag us at two hosers on the Instagram. We'll check that out and Adam will make fun of you at the end of the month. Challenge for next week, Adam.
Yes.
X100.
Okay.
Done. Okay, mine's sitting in front of me, ND filter off, ready to go.
Perfect.
Websites. Adam, where can people go to find your stuff?
AdamSchwartz.ca.
And you can find mine at AlanAtrich.com, the two of us at twohosers.com, where you can go to find all the links, photos, everything we just talked about. And that's it. Till next week, get out there and make better photos.